This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otapoti, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Sam, how's it going?
It's going very well indeed, and people will be pleased to know that in Blowing Bubbles Land, it is still your birthday.
Yes, this is my last birthday for the year. The last episode that we're recording today and tomorrow will become my post-birthday recording, so... And thankfully, I don't go up a year for each one of these.
We'll have to call it Boxing Birthday tomorrow. No, we're not recording any tomorrow. We don't get to do that.
Oh, that's right. No, day it's after Saturday Boxing while I'm day. In Christchurch.
So, who are we introducing today?
It is my absolute great pleasure to introduce Caitlin Riley today. Caitlin is a Master of Sustainable Business student from the University of Otago. As part of our Coming Up for Air series. Welcome, Caitlin. It is a joy to have you here today.
Kia ora. Thank you both so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And happy birthday. I had no idea that we're celebrating your birthday.
this is day four of my birthday.
I love that.
Well, welcome, Caitlin. Where did you grow up, Caitlin?
I am born and raised in Dunedin, so I have lived here in pretty much my whole entire life. I lived briefly in Brisbane for 2 months early in the year, but other than that, I have always been in Dunedin. So I went to University of Otago also for my bachelor's degree, so have been consistently here.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, goodness. When I was growing up, I mean, I had such a range of different things going on in my mind. There was a brief while where I decided I was going to be a doctor, and then I was going to be a lawyer, and this is probably age 17 where I probably should have had a better idea of what I wanted to do. And then I started to get more interested in the management space as well as teaching. And then when I started doing my bachelor's degree, I was doing management and economics and became really passionate through management about sustainability and also business ethics. And then that's kind of led me to where I am now today. So I am very much interested in looking at how can businesses become more sustainable and ethical?
We wrote a paper a while ago about whether or not those two are the same thing. What's your take?
Oh, okay. I think they are linked, but I do not see them as the same entity. I think that they can be used in combination to create positive benefits for both. But I do see ethics as more of the guidelines that we see externally in businesses, and sustainability is more of a goal, I guess, in some aspects.
It's interesting, we're talking to someone on Blowing Bubbles, one of your colleagues, and they were talking about how they did their undergrad like 7 years ago and sustainability wasn't really a thing at that time.
Mm.
What do you mean it wasn't a thing at that time? That might have applied if you'd said it in 1970. It was an interesting, it always brings me back as a bit of a shock to, where's that going?
That is, yeah, it's definitely a very interesting take. I feel like in some of my assignments I've done in the past, I actually looked at how sustainability over the past decade, how it's made such a movement and how we perceive sustainability to be, or what the pillars of sustainability are. and how environmental sustainability has only really become, you know, a factor in especially CSR as well in the last decade and also.
So you're now doing a master's in sustainable business, and the sustainability and the ethics attracted to you to that. Why do you think that was?
Cool. That's a very interesting question. I feel like part of me has always been drawn to sustainability. I think I just wasn't aware of that when I was younger. I mean, I wanted to become a doctor, like I said earlier, but that was because I wanted to help people. And I wanted to become a lawyer because I wanted to help people in a more legal sense. I think my passion has always been trying to help other people. And I think collaborating, working together is so important to me. And I see sustainability as being really tied to that. I think that protecting the environment, protecting social sustainability, those things all correlate with making our lives better. And so that's probably why, yeah.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
Not off the top of my head, no. I think I see sustainability as being adaptive almost and entirely dependent on what sort of situation or thing that you're looking at. But overall, I would see it as sustainability as making sure that you are protecting future generations in a environmental, social, financial sense.
I'm sure Mawira has and Joe have talked about different models of sustainability, and you've talked about environmental and social sustainability. My argument would be that it's a bit of a nonsense talking about environmental sustainability as somehow separate to sustainability than the social sustainability. It's the notion of bringing them together that is what is why we're still talking about this thing called sustainability. Does that, or how do those sort of models of sustainability, whether it's a Brundtland type definition or any of the others, or moving into regeneration or thing, how does that sit with the other things that you've been taught in your business degree and master's? Do you have to, you know, does it all sit nicely together, or are you thinking, oh yes, that's sustainability on Friday and I'll have to ignore that for the rest of the week?
Goodness. It's quite a hard question to answer. I feel like I do, it is different with different classes and things, and you kind of have to adapt to the sort of models that you're using in each class in terms of sustainability. I know that, when I was doing my degree, there were some papers that had different definitions for sustainability because while it is a topic that we frequently talk about, it's not something that we have a direct definition of. So I don't know. Yeah, sorry. I know that's not a particularly great answer to that question, but
it wasn't a very good question either. So yeah, that's okay. Let's take the first of your music choices. We're having I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles from the West Ham squad in 75. Why this one?
I thought it was very fitting, first of all, for this podcast, Blowing Bubbles. Second of all, my dad's side of the family, massive football fans. We are raised that when we are born, we are given a football team in the Premier League. So I was given West Ham, and I'm sure there's a photo of me somewhere with, I think I had a full West Ham kit on. I had a West Ham bed, like a duvet cover. I had a West Ham calendar in the background and a massive West Ham poster as a kid. So I thought it was very fitting. I haven't kept up in the last few years, so please don't ask me any questions about football now. But I thought it's perfect for this podcast because I listened to that song so much growing up.
It's probably not the year to be supporting West Ham. Let's just leave it at that, shall we?
everybody has got somebody who is the wind beneath their wings, role models, people who teach them amazing things and get them to where they are. Who have your role models been and what have they modelled?
Oh, that is a fantastic question. I think I've been very lucky in my life to have many different role models for many different aspects of my life. My parents have been such like a guiding light in my academic journey and people that I can always fall back on and ask questions to if I'm unsure of, you know, what my path is or what should I be doing. I also have amazing friends that I've had for a very long time now since school, and they have been an amazing support system. They kind of are role models to me in the way that I want to be in this world and the sort of person that I want to be with other people, and ensuring that I'm a kind, good person who's making beneficial changes in other people's lives. And they have just been amazing in that aspect.
When you think about yourself as a role model for the future that you're walking into, what do you think, what do you want people to recognize in your own practice? What do you bring to the table?
I hope that people would see me as someone who makes positive change in people's everyday lives. I think that that is my goal in life, in a business sense and in a personal sense. And I try, even now at my part-time job, to help other people, whether that is, you know, in just more of a social aspect, cheering them up, or if that is helping them out with duties or helping the managers with things. And I think in the long term, that would be what I want people to recognize in myself. They'd say, oh, Caitlin, you know, she's such a helpful person. Or
so I can tell you from my observation of you in the classroom that you model those things very well. There is no doubt about that. What's your part-time job?
I work part-time at a retail store.
Oh, cool. Okay. And so I imagine I can see that you would model it just as well there too.
And thank you.
Before you said the magic word, you said teacher. And I, you know, like my ears always prick up because I always want to know who our teachers are going to be going forward. Is that something that you think about? Is teaching a thing for you?
Teaching has always been a massive thing for me. Before I decided to do the Master of Sustainable Business, I was also considering doing the Master of Teaching and Learning. Oh. I have always been drawn to education. It kind of all ties back to what I said earlier about wanting to help people and make changes and impacts in that sense. But I feel like teaching the younger generation and knowing that you are setting them up for life, whether that is just a, you know, a math problem that they end up being able to solve because you taught them, or in a larger sense of you helped them as a person realize who they are, and that helped them move forth in their life and, you know, grow. I think children grow into these amazing young people, and so much of that happens as children. So that's really important to me. And I do see myself maybe as going into that field later, but I'm not entirely sure of what I want to do with my life.
That's always the tricky one. So, Caitlin, you have made a podcast, and we're going to play that podcast now. Who did you interview and why did you choose them?
I interviewed Blake Holgate. He's from Rabobank, which is an agricultural bank of New Zealand. I interviewed him because I think it's really important to try and learn about spaces where you haven't particularly been involved in the past. So I don't know too much about the agricultural space, and that's why I decided to interview him. I was very curious. I know that the agricultural industry gets a lot of criticism about their sustainability, and so I was curious about what was happening in that area, because I know that there is changes being made, and I wanted to talk about what is the future of farming in a sustainable space. And he is the head of sustainable business development at Rabobank, so he had some fantastic insights of his podcast.
I think that's the best reason for doing an interview ever.
Yeah, same.
Thank you.
Welcome back to another episode of Coming Up for Air. My name is Caitlin Riley, and I'll be your host today. In this episode, we're diving into one of the most pressing challenges facing New Zealand's primary sector, the tension between sustainability demands and the realities of farming. On the one hand, sustainability is no longer optional. Academic research has shown that agricultural businesses are under growing pressure to address environmental, social, and governance concerns, not just to meet regulations, but to remain viable in global markets. A 2025 study by Hun Young Ge, An Overview of New Zealand's Economic and Environmental Sustainability in Agriculture, 40 Years Without Subsidies, found that while farming became more efficient after subsidies were removed in the 1980s, recent decades have seen new challenges. Nutrient losses, fertilizer use, and greenhouse gas emissions are all growing issues, especially without stronger investment in research and innovation. At the same time, recent news articles have highlighted how these pressures are being felt in real time. In August 2025, the Otago Daily Times reported on a Southland group raising concerns that new sustainability initiatives risk piling further stress on farmers. Similarly, in an article in the New Zealand Herald from July 2025, Dr. Jacqueline Rowarth warned that green finance rules designed to promote environmental performance may end up harming New Zealand farming if expectations are pushed beyond what's practical. So, how do farmers and the businesses that support them navigate these challenges? To explore this, I spoke with Blake Holgate, Head of Sustainable Business Development at Rabobank New Zealand.
Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. I really appreciate it. So do you want to introduce yourself quickly for the
listeners? So Blake Holgate, I'm Head of Sustainable Business Development with Rabobank based in Dunedin.
Cool, thank you. So to start us off, we've got a set question which we're asking all of our interviewees. So what or where is your happy place?
Probably just at home with the family. I live out in Outram. It's not on a farm, but it's out looking out onto a farm.
Nice.
With a nice big section and nice view of the Mangatawas. So nice summer's day where it's nice and warm, and outside having a few drinks and kids on the lawn is always nice.
So how did you get to where you are today?
Oh, good question. So originally I was a lawyer.
Yep.
I practiced resource management public law here in Dunedin for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Got sick of that and thought probably not for me. So yep. I went back to university and did my Masters of Business Administration. It's part of the Otago MBA. You've got to do a consultancy report. I was keen to get into agriculture just because that was my background. I wrote to all the banks and said, hey, here's my CV. I need a project. Do you have anything for me? And Rabobank actually came back to me and said, look, we notice you come from a resource management environmental law background. We're concerned about the impact of freshwater regulations on the farming sector. Would you mind writing a paper for us on what the implications are? So I did that and presented to the CEO, and must have scared the heck out of him because he said, what are you doing after the MBA? Do you want a job?
Wow, that's amazing.
And that's how I started with Rabobank in the sustainability space, and that was 12 years and still here.
That's so cool. Can you tell me about the moment in your life that led to your views on sustainability and how your views have changed since then?
Oh, there's probably no real one moment.
Yep.
That experience I just explained was the real catalyst.
Yes.
I didn't come from a, shall we say, a sustainability background. I didn't have a particular bent towards sustainability.
Yes.
My concern was more around farmers and the farming industry.
Yes.
And the challenges and pressures they were facing.
Right.
And it just happened to be that sustainability was the big pressure and change that they were facing.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, I suppose, that was the catalyst. Mm-hmm. And over the 12 years that I've been working at Rabobank, it's just been continually shaped across the different experiences and the different contexts that come up has probably shaped my view to where I am now.
I'm sure it's changed a lot in the last decade as well.
Very much so.
Different research and things. So you work at Rabobank New Zealand, as you said earlier. So for listeners who may not know, could you explain what Rabobank does?
Sure. So Rabobank was actually established in the Netherlands over 125 years ago. It was actually during a famine. A number of farmers pulled their capital and resources together to enable them to lend out to other farmers to produce more food. So it started as a cooperative and is still a cooperative in the Netherlands. So it's owned by its members. Over time, it's expanded internationally into the global market.
Mm-hmm.
In the Netherlands, where Rabobank's a full-service bank, so like your ANZs or BNZs here. Outside the Netherlands, we primarily just focus on the food supply chain. So we're an agricultural bank, in other words, but we'll finance, you know, right through from farm inputs to farmers to processors to distribution, but very much focused on that food supply chain.
So how long has the Rabobank been around in New Zealand?
Just over 30 years.
Wow.
So just over 30 years ago, we bought a very small bank called PIBA, which was the Primary Industry Producers Bank of Australia or something similar. So I think that was 1994. And then 4 years after that, we bought Wrightson's Finance, which was a bigger footprint, and have continued to grow since then.
Wow, that's very interesting. So what does your role as Head of Sustainable Business Development involve?
I'm always trying to figure that out myself, to be perfectly honest, and it kind of ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
But essentially my role is focusing on our clients, so farmers,
yeah,
to help the bank understand what are the challenges and changes coming towards them in, yes, the sustainability space, and then what can we do to best support them to position themselves to succeed, not just in the next 12 months, but in 10 or 15 years' time, in the operating environment they're likely to be operating under is quite different from what it's going to be in 12 months.
Yes.
So they're making investment decisions and borrowing capital from us that's going to be a long-term investment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's enabling and supporting them to make, you know, really good decisions to have successful businesses over the life of that investment.
So why is implementing sustainability in farming important?
Yeah, I think there's two levels to this, yep, in my mind, and one is very kind of high level and almost philosophical.
Okay.
But we know we need to produce more nutrients to feed a growing population.
Yep.
That's just the fact. But we need to do it in a way that reduces the impact that those same food production systems have on the environment and the climate.
Yes.
So that's quite a challenge. We need to produce more, but in a way that reduces the impacts that we've traditionally been having. So we've got to, you know, really move away from this model of just producing more, thinking about how we produce and the impacts that it has. So that's kind of the big high level,
yep,
shall we say. And with that comes policy and regulatory controls and restraints and market drivers that come into that and consumer preferences. Now, why, as a farmer, when you narrow that all down, that at the end of the day actually starts to have business implications.
Yes.
Because that will, in very simplistic terms, what we're seeing is increasingly cost controls, constraints on some of those negative impacts that farming systems have, whether that's around loss of nutrients from water quality, whether that's emissions. We're seeing rules and regulations, whether it's from regulators or the market being imposed.
Yep.
But equally, we're starting to see value put on the positive impacts that farming systems have, sequestration of carbon or nature.
Yes.
So as a business, you have to understand, well, how am I exposed to those risks or costs, and what opportunities do the value aspects provide to me?
Yes.
And then incorporate that into your business strategy and understand, what does all that mean for how I'm going to operate my business and strategically where I'm going to take my business?
So how have Rabobank's clients and stakeholders' expectations around sustainability changed in recent years?
Yeah, as I mentioned, I started 12 years ago.
Yep.
And when I first started, I'd say it was quite a narrow scope. So sustainability, again, I'm probably talking pretty simplistically, but was about regulation.
Yes.
And it was probably about freshwater regulation. So you're almost equating sustainability with, you know, nitrogen limits in Canterbury, and what does that mean? I think stakeholders and farmers and the industry as a whole have probably matured and developed a lot in respect of attitudes towards sustainability over that time. So we understand sustainability is significantly broader than one issue or topic, and broader than even, you know, just environment, and you start to get into some of those social and other aspects of sustainability. And it's much broader than just regulation.
Yeah.
Regulation is one risk, I suppose, or challenge associated with sustainability. It's not the full
picture.
Yeah.
And
I think the other bit we've matured is the opportunities side of it. So opportunities in terms of going, actually a lot of what we're talking about is just running more efficient systems.
Mm-hmm.
So reducing the inputs that we're having that result in the outputs.
Yeah.
And also there's market value out there, so how we can capitalise on that. So I just see it as sort of a maturing over time. Definitely significantly more important to,
yes,
stakeholders, much broader, but also I think that the attitudes and the way we look and think about sustainability has just evolved a lot over time.
And then what are the biggest challenges farmers are facing when moving toward sustainable practices?
First of all, it's probably defining what we mean when we talk about,
right,
sustainable practices. Like, what does good look like? Where is it that they're expected to move to? And I don't think there's one definition of that that applies across the board. It really is different for each farmer, depending on where you farm, what you're farming, how you're farming, your farming philosophy. I don't think it's a cookie cutter.
Yeah, not a one-size-fits-all.
Absolutely. You need to understand, you know, what is it the risks or impacts that I'm having from a sustainability perspective, as we talked about earlier. What are those opportunities? And then where does that fit within my business strategy? And then where do I want to move to?
Yep.
And then it's looking at that, well, what are the practices I can put in place? And there'll be what we'll call the low-hanging fruit. So there'll be some of them, the no regrets. We go, oh, I can do this because it's no real cost and I can see the benefit straight away.
Yes.
But then there'll be others as you progress through that, go, well, this will have an implication or a cost or a loss of production or something if I do that. So there's a trade-off that I need to start evaluating.
Right.
And then, you know, need to make that decision. So I think one of the barriers is probably accessing the information to enable farmers to make informed decisions once you start to get into those areas where they feel they're making trade-offs.
Yes, yeah.
They sort of want to make sure they're making good decisions that will benefit them both financially and sustainability-wise.
You mentioned this a bit earlier, but what are some of the key opportunities that sustainable farming is creating?
One is, I think we're getting a much better understanding around what is the natural capital that I've got within my farming system. What am I sitting on from a soil health perspective, from a topography perspective, from a climate perspective, even from a stock perspective? I think we're looking a lot harder around, you know, what have I got and how does that fit with what and how I'm farming? So I think that's a real opportunity and real positive. And then that sort of leads on to what we were talking about before around, then you start to look at some of the efficiencies within that, because if you can start to match up your natural capital with what you're doing, it's likely to result in more efficiency. So there's kind of the on-farm practice efficiency bit, and then there's the market opportunity. You know, there's different programs or schemes that processors will run where you'll get a premium for achieving certain outcomes. Now, that's not for every farmer, and again, your farming system, there might be particular reasons why that, from a business strategy perspective, doesn't make sense to chase those premiums.
Yeah.
Other systems, there will be make sense to go and get those premiums. And then we're starting to see the other aspect that I touched on earlier around those positive impacts that farming systems are having in terms of, for example, carbon sequestration are now becoming a tangible income stream that farmers can access. At the moment or to date, carbon's been reasonably limited in terms of how farmers can access value for their on-farm sequestration. You know, it's been a small box defined by the emissions trading scheme. It's had to be forestry with certain criteria and parameters around that.
Yeah.
Now, there is some farmers that have gone out there and capitalised that and integrated trees within their farming system.
Mm-hmm.
We know the sequestration that happens on farms is much broader than planting of trees. Yes. So we're starting to see opportunities broaden beyond that in the voluntary carbon market that's enabling farmers to monetize on-farm sequestration. I think what we'll see in the future is sort of similar opportunities in relation to nature.
Interesting.
So increasingly the market is looking at how do we value nature and how do we provide tangible monetary returns to the landowners that are creating and protecting.
Right.
So it's still relatively early in the nature market space. There's opportunities, but they're reasonably small. I expect over time there'll be much more opportunities in that space for farmers.
That's very interesting. Thank you so much. So who or what has inspired you most in your sustainability journey?
I think it would be the farmers. It's like when you talk and see what they've done, it's pretty phenomenal. Again, you know, from where I started 12 years ago, I think we've seen massive progress in the industry. Like the idea that you'd go on a farm 12 years ago and tell all farmers they need a farm environment plan would have been quite foreign back then. Now that's kind of the given. That's almost like the norm, and it's moved on so far from there. And then you look at the catchment groups that are operating out there that have just taken complete ownership of their own issues and challenges, and they're coming up with practical real world solutions that wouldn't have occurred, you know, if it was sort of in a boardroom or a corporate office or somewhere, you know, planning remotely from the farm. You know, they're just out there doing this stuff and coming up with solutions. Now, that's not to say there's some in the industry that still need to make further gains and improvement, but by and large, I think we've seen massive progress over the last 12 years.
We were talking in one of my classes, actually, it kind of relates to what you're talking about, where if you have too tight of regulations, then you stop people from making their own solutions that they would be making regardless.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you set the bar either at a too high or at a wrong threshold, you'll force people, they'll have to meet that. That's all they do, and that might not be the right solution.
Yes.
Or, in my mind, you need a certain level of regulation because that is required to, you know, motivate change and to ensure those that aren't progressing do progress and reach a certain level. But I don't know if it should be the regulation that's kind of setting the aspiration or setting the target of where we've got to get to. It should be that the backstop, not that leading target, because like I said, you put it in the hands of the farmers and they'll come up with much better solutions than you're going to get sitting in a planning room trying to come up with some of this stuff.
What gives you the most hope for the future of farming?
I think, you know, what we've already seen from farmers and catchment groups And that combined with, you know, there's a lot of good, talented people in the industry working on these solutions. So I think we will start to see more tools and technologies come along that will enable the farmers to, again, address that fundamental challenge we talked about at the start. How do you produce more food, nutrients, whilst reducing the impact you have on the environment and the climate? There's a lot of smart, good people working on those tools that will, over time, progressively reach the farmers in a way that adds value to their business, but also manages to reduce some of those impacts that we're having at the moment.
Wonderful. And so my final question here, what is one simple thing people can do to live more sustainably?
First step is to, you know, understand the impact that you're having. That's, I think, the most fundamental and important one, because you could spend 90% of your time and effort fixing something that's a 1% problem. I think you're much better to map it out and understand where is it the 90% impact that I'm having, and is there some small, simple things within that 90% area that I can do to get change, and progressively focusing time and effort on the areas that will make the difference for you. That varies from each person, right?
Yeah.
You've got to understand what it is, the impact that you're having, and then address that within your life.
I think that's actually a brilliant answer, because I think a lot of people, you know, we focus so much on changing certain parts of our lifestyles to be more sustainable, but it's not actually making the differences we're trying to make.
Exactly. Like, yeah, as I said, being really clear and understanding what is the impact that I'm having, where is the majority of the impact that I'm having, and what can I do to address that?
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. I really appreciate it.
As we've heard, sustainability in farming is a moving target, shaped by regulation, market expectations, and the creativity of farmers themselves. The research by Han Young-gu reminds us that major shifts, such as subsidy removal, can drive progress, but without continued investment in science, technology, and farmer support, improvements stall and environmental pressures rise. Recent news articles show us that these debates are far from settled, with concerns about fairness and feasibility shaping the public conversation. And through my interview with Blake Holgate, it is clear that from Rabobank's perspective, farmers are already adapting, innovating, and even creating new income streams through practices like carbon sequestration. The key takeaway? Sustainability is not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's about supporting farmers and making choices that are both environmentally responsible and financially viable. Once again, my name is Caitlin Riley, and I want to thank you for joining me today on this episode of Coming Up for Air.
Caitlin, what was your big takeaway from that awesome interview?
Ooh, that is tricky. I think what I learned most from the podcast is that massive progress is being made in the agricultural space, and I think it's incredibly important to create targets for sustainability, but I also think it's important to make sure they are realistic, because there are people involved in these industries and we don't want to be leaving them behind, or, you know, they might lose their jobs or their livelihoods. Another big takeaway that I got from the podcast is that what he was saying about, he said, what does good look like? And I thought that was such a fantastic question to be asking ourselves, not just, you know, farmers, but also us as individuals, because sustainability is something that is adaptive. It's not one size fits all. We have to be looking at who we are, what we have, and what we can do going forward. And I think often we think of sustainability in terms of, well, I'd like to be here. We don't think about what it's going to take to get there. And so I think a lot of what he was saying in the podcast was a really good insight into that.
Was there anything in that you were kind of identified about Blake and the way that he practices in his professional practice space that you think, oh, that I want to take that skill or that approach or that with me into my own practice space?
For a very basic skill, he was fantastic at talking with me and also making me understand. He was talking about some complicated processes and different things, and he made it so that it was easy for me to digest, and I can only imagine that that's what he does for farmers as well. He's dealing with some very complicated things, and it's very tricky. Something he mentioned in the podcast is that farmers don't have much time. It's a very time-intensive job, what they're doing, and so it's really difficult for them to get the information they need about sustainability, and so that's part of his job, is educating them on what they need to do. And so I think that what he is very skilled at is learning something and then processing it and passing it on. So I think And that way he's a very good teacher himself, actually.
Do you think that people, that the wider community understands the contribution of farming to the, not just to our local economy, to the, you know, to the national economy, but to the local economy as well? I was talking to a farmer recently about how much he pays in regional council rates. It was flipping huge amount of money, and like people complain about the rates that they pay, you know, for living in town, but oh my gosh, if you've got rural land, those rates are huge. Do you think that generally people understand that?
No, I think people don't understand that, and I totally understand. I think it is easy for us to not be able to understand or comprehend something that might be further away from our own viewpoint ourselves. And you know, I've lived in a city my whole life, so farming is a more distant thing for me, and so I totally understand that people can't quite grasp that. But I think it is important to recognize that farmers make quite a massive contribution to our economy. They're paying massive rates, they're making a lot of movement in sustainable spaces. Not everyone, but a lot of them are. And I think it's important to recognize the hard work that they're doing, because we're all in this together. And as cheesy as it is to say, we are all going into this future together. We want to bring everyone up. It's not about some communities going up, it's about bringing everyone up together.
What does up mean in that sense? Like, if we there's no such thing as growth without limits. So when we talk about up, are we talking about growth, everything goes up, which is extraction based? Or what's your view on that?
My view of up is definitely not in like a GDP or economic sense per se. I do think that that has a cap to it. I think that growth should not be unlimited. There should be a limit to where growth is. To me, going up is becoming more collaborative, becoming more, I guess, improving well-being and ensuring that we are all in a safe, happy place, that we can support ourselves. I guess it is more of an economic one, but making sure everyone can support themselves going into the future. So I see it as more of a internal sense of up, I suppose.
Well, I say Caitlin for Prime Minister.
Curious Caitlin.
I'll take that, my first endorsement.
Curious Caitlin for Prime Minister. Exactly, Sam. Just got to find a way to add Caitlin.
Although, if you're going to be Prime Minister, I think there's some more exploration to do about aspiration. not that your understanding's not right, but I think there's some thinking about whether or not aspirational goals are a good thing, or should we just say we're going to set the goal as something we can actually achieve next year, or should we be stretching a bit further? Particularly if the group you're working with is being a bit slow, then maybe acknowledging, oh, we're only going to move this little bit. Well, actually, no, that's not good enough. We need a whole transformation. We need you to move way over here. But it was interesting to hear Blake from Rabobank, you know, actually talking about that and talking about that. Those are the sorts of questions that are being held about the sort of the positive impacts and the and I can't remember if it was you or him that said it about moving away from a model of just producing more. That's kind of a big call, particularly as where farming has gone in the last 20 years has been about producing more. And so that leads us to that bigger question about business. Is business's profit motive is all about producing more? What happens if that's not the answer? What do we do about that? There, almost a question at the end of that. What are your thoughts on the relationship between business and the profit motive of business and sustainability, which is actually not about that? And how do those two things sit nicely together?
I think as someone who really enjoys sustainability, I definitely see a profit-driven focus as just completely outdated. I think that we have created a system where we think that growth needs to be perpetual and just getting larger and larger and larger. And that is, to me, what is driving class inequality. It's also what's driving, mass issues of mental health and other things. It's only making things worse. And so I see profit more as something as profit to me is something that we can use to go into sustainability. How can we invest in making processes and pathways into becoming more sustainable? And I just don't understand personally why a profit-driven focus would be important to businesses. I think it is about where can we be in the future? How can we all move together to become happier, to become more environmentally friendly? And I think that's what's most important to me. So I see profit as something that might go with sustainability, but I don't see a profit-driven focus as something that is necessary anymore.
If I was to characterize, probably unfairly, economics as being about rational decision-making, but that rational decision-making being tied to growth, how did somebody with such interesting views as yours get through a bachelor's degree in economics, management and economics?
Well, it definitely made me feel like my viewpoint was very different to some other people's viewpoints in economics. I definitely felt my view was largely different, but I think what I really benefited from my economics major was, how can we ensure that our goals are rational? How can we ensure that our goals are realistic? And I think that sometimes we have these amazing ideas of what the future could be, but we don't actually look at how can we make that real. And so I think doing economics, it taught me a lot about how can we ensure that things are realistic? How can we make a pathway to go this way? And so while I didn't necessarily agree with some, you know, looking at GDP and looking at profit focus, I do see the rational side of economics as being super important. And behavioral economics is a growing space that I think is really cool. And I like to see the progress that's going on there.
Did you have to actively protect yourself from the neoliberal mantra?
I used to wear a bulletproof vest going into class. There's a lot of people there who were totally understandable of my views being a bit different than others. And there's a lot of cool people going into it. It's nice to see a lot of young people with different viewpoints going into the economic space. And I hope to see some real change happening there in businesses in the future.
Let's take the second of your music choices. I've completely lost it in my notes. There it is, Blue Oyster Cult, Don't Fear the Reaper.
Thank you.
Caitlin, I have some questions to end the show, and actually negative minutes, so we're going to have to really wriggle and I have to edit some out. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Okay, the biggest success that I can see, I know that this is not about myself, but my biggest success in life is seeing my younger sisters go through lives and become their own people. And one of my sisters, she is just doing so amazing. She's in her second year of her degree. She is just thriving, and that makes me so happy to see. And my younger sister just got a scholarship and just got a place in a hall for next year. And I know that that is not a personal success, but it feels like a personal success to see people that you love so much do so well. And I hope that I had even just a small part of that. So that feels like a success to me.
I know you're probably not going to describe this as your superpower, but I think you just exhibited a superpower. What do you think is your superpower?
Oh, gosh. That is tricky. I think my superpower has always been I'm really great with young kids. I know that that's not technically related to sustainability, but that has been my whole life. Little kids are always drawn to me and like want me to play with them or teach them different things. And even recently, my friends and I went to the Blossom Festival out in Alexandria, and we had a young baby crawling over to me from, it was like 10 meters away. And then her brother came and they were just sitting next to me, and their parents came over and they're like, "Is this okay?" And I was like, "It's totally fine." But maybe it's a silly superpower to have, but it always makes me feel really nice. I feel like being liked by children is like being liked by dogs or by cats. It always makes you feel super special.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yes, and I think that while I do see myself as being an activist, I think I have a lot of growth to do in that space, and I would love to make a lot of improvement in how I'm advocating for different causes that I believe in. I think that, to me, learning throughout your life is the most important thing you can do. I think I want to make sure that I'm consistently learning every single day of my life, and I think that that is a big space where I want to do more.
I think you are the first of your classmates this year to say yes to that question. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Ooh, my advice would be to, if you're talking in a more sustainable business sense, or you know, sustainability in your own
life. It's a free hit. You can say anything you like.
Okay, well then what I will say is I think it's super important to recognize who you are as a person, recognize the qualities that you have and what you have to teach or show other people that will make improvements in their lives. And I think that's the most important thing to me, is recognizing who you are so that you can recognize who you could be for other people.
Also, fantastic advice. Mawira.
Caitlin, I have absolutely loved having you in a class that I've been part of. And your podcast was beautiful. This interview was beautiful. I hope that teaching does get to keep you, because that would be amazing for those students. Thank you for your time today. All the best for the future. And if there is any way that we can ever support that future, just reach out. We're there. Kia ora.
Thank you both so much. I really appreciate it. I have had a great time on this podcast. I've been very nervous, but you have both been such fantastic hosts. And I look forward to talking to you more in the future.
Thank you. We are going out celebrating Mawira's birthday for the last time. We're going out to Lizzo, Birthday Girl.
Is it your birthday, girl? 'Cause you looking like a present. Is it your birthday, girl? Ooh. Woo, it's on me, ladies. Gon' get it if you want it. It's free, ladies. Feel good when you're rolling with me, don't it? We here, we just had to believe.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We are broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We were joined today by Caitlin Riley, who brought her contribution of Coming Up for Air. She brought us Blake Holgate from Rabobank. With Wawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. That's Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Ma te wa. You know me in Patron.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.